Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, January 16, 2024. Authorities in Upper Nile State are concerned about the health of returnees and internally displaced persons.
The food being given to them is not enough. Some medicine on the ground also are not even enough for them.
And the United Nations approves additional money to support returnees and Sudanese fleeing conflict in their country.
Our emergency relief coordinator, Alec Martin Griffiths, has handed out $10 million from the Central Emergency Response Fund to support men, women, and children fleeing from Sudan to the neighboring country, South Sudan. The funds will be used to build shelters, offer cash assistance, build water, sanitation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Upper Nile State link health challenges among the returnees to poor nutrition. More than 100 returnees died last year at the Bulukat Transit Center. The police commissioner in Upper Nile State urges communities in Malakal and aid agencies to donate food and other goods to the returnees to ease their situation. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Court reports from Malakal town.
Dr. Kadeng, the medical director at Malakal Teaching Hospital, says many returnees at Bulukat Transit Center in Malakal suffer from severe illnesses made worse by poor nutrition.
The majority of cases among the returnees is due to these illnesses. Sometimes it will be pneumonia, severe malaria, complicated malaria, other gastroenteritis also will contribute to their death. The issue of nutrition also is playing a role. For some time, if you are not getting the good nutrition, you may end up getting to the losing weight and into other medical complications due to lack of quality food.
Deng Michael, the director for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Malakal, also says many children die at the transit center due to lack of medicines.
The food being given to them is not enough. Some medicine on the ground also are not even enough for them. Sometimes children are dying on the ground due to lack of drugs. So these are the challenges actually facing them on the ground.
Mai Kong, the chairperson of the Task Force for the Reception of Returnees and Foreign Nationals in Malakal, says the causes of death last year included measles among children, while chronic diseases and drowning also killed some elderly returnees. He says 7 people drowned.
Last year, we have a lot of cases of death, mostly the children. The total number of the death cases was 118, 95 children, and elderly 23. The cause of the death was measles, and also for the elderly cases was just the different chronic disease. 2 children are drawn in this river. This year, a little bit somehow, just only malaria and diarrhea is managed by 2 clinics, IMC and MSF.
He says he has urged the World Food Program to increase the amount of food it gives to returnees, but the UN agency is yet to respond to his call.
If the arrival has become too high or the number is increased, also that can be a problem. If the returnees spend more than the day that WFP giving the food, if they spend more than 7 days, can be a challenge based on the crowded in the TC. Even now, you can find someone who has spent 12 days or 13 days. So we need support from humanitarian to look at that.
Himet Hatcher is the medical coordinator for the aid group Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF, at Bulukat Transit Center. He says returnees spend 3 or 4 days on a boat between Reng and Malakal. He says some elderly people do not eat on the boats, which cause them to die on the boat or on arrival.
2 of the returnees arrive dead because the boat took 4 days from Reng to Malakal, and two older person died because they are hungered. Imagine, by less food, they died, because, as you know, from Reng to come here, they give to them biscuit, and for the older person, they can't eat biscuit. It's too difficult for them. And 4 days without food, without clean water, they drink from the river. The older person with chronic disease, he will or she will die.
20-year-old Awek Ariak says 14,000 South Sudan pounds is given to returnees, but it's gone within 5 days after they arrived Malakal, so they have no idea how they will survive. She says the cost of living is too high, and she's not sure of how soon she will leave the transit center to go to Awil.
Each one of us was given 14,000 SSP. We did not receive food. But here food items are expensive. The money does not last. When we eat the biscuit we were given, it causes stomach ache. It can cause sickness. And to the children, it is very bad.
Anae Makwe, who is traveling with his brother's children, says he got a stomach ache 2 days ago, but was given medicine to relieve it. He urges the government and International Organization for Migration to help returnees leave the transit center in Malakal quickly.
We face a lot of challenges because there is no food. Yesterday I had a stomach ache and I went to the clinic. I was given drugs and the doctors told me that there is lack of medicine. If you get some medicine, use it well until you recover. I ask the government and agencies to increase the flight so that everyone should go to their final destinations, to go and find ways of living, and for children also to find a better life.
Major General Chol Atem Jonget, Police Commissioner in Upper Nile State, says hunger is a major cause of severe illnesses among returnees. He urges communities in Malakal and aid agencies to donate food and non-food items to improve the living standards of returnees.
Could be just some diseases, and of course hunger could be. Generally, staying of a person who's coming through a distance, there is an accumulation or a complex of problems could cause that situation. They need help individually or in group, shelters, food. I mean contributions of ordinary citizens of Malakal to offer this or anything that you have. And then I can hash the organizations to at least double their hand to these people.
Last week, International Organization for Migration Emergency Preparedness Coordinator Aaron Atkins said IOM and the humanitarian community are grappling with funding shortages in 2024. He said returnees from Sudan come with critical health conditions and the IOM will ensure they are treated before they are transported.
It is true that people who are arriving from Sudan do have some disconcerting health conditions. We screen prior to departure to try and ensure that people who are in need of treatment, that they seek the treatment before moving anywhere. And for the most part, we're doing everything we can to ensure that people are safe along the way and that they have.
Atkins says the response is improving and appreciates the government of Upper Nile State for providing security to the returnees and refugees. He pledges that IOM will continue its support to the returnees and internally displaced persons if funding is availed. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwot in Malakal.
Still on matters to do with refugees and returnees in South Sudan, the United Nations has allocated $10 million from its Central Emergency Response Fund to help South Sudan cope with surging displacement in the country and to support people fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
United Nations spokesperson Stephane Dujarric told reporters in New York on Monday the UN is concerned about the humanitarian situation in South Sudan.
Our emergency relief coordinator, Alec Amarn Griffiths, has handed out $10 million from the Central Emergency Response Fund to support men, women, and children fleeing from Sudan to the neighboring country, South Sudan. The funds will be used to build shelters, offer cash assistance, build water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities, and support onward transportation for new arrivals who are currently staying at overcrowded transit sites.
Dujarric said fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces in some parts of Sudan could force civilians to flee towards South Sudan's border in the coming weeks.
We are anticipating thousands of additional people may cross the border into South Sudan from Sudan over the next 6 months, stressing an already system that is already under stress. And just in the past month, more than 60,000 people have arrived in South Sudan following the outbreak of clashes in and around Wad Madani, Sudan's second largest city. And as of today, about 500,000 people have crossed into South Sudan since mid-April.
Sudan has been gripped by nearly 9 months of conflict, pitting Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan against his former deputy paramilitary commander Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. Fighting between the rival forces has claimed at least 12,190 lives, according to an estimate by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Efforts to end the conflict in Sudan did not gain traction as the leaders struggled for legitimacy. Regional leaders from the African continent and the United Nations say more than 7 million people have been displaced. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Kampala, where the summit of the Non-Aligned Movement is underway this week, where delegates from Somalia and the Palestinian people are lobbying for support, while the Palestinians are urging members to find a way to end the conflict in Gaza. Somalia says it needs support to maintain its territorial integrity. Halima Athumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
93 out of 120 nations in the non-aligned movement have gathered in Kampala for the 19th summit of the movement. For the plenary session that began Monday, Arab nations made clear that Gaza must be the focus of the meeting. Delegates said the NAM summit must find the right language to address what they called the violent and savage aggression by the State of Israel in perpetuating a genocide in Gaza. A delegate from Mauritius said the summit must make a political declaration on the war, which broke out October 7th after the Palestinian militant group Hamas attacked Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostage, 105 of whom were released in November. Israel's military response has killed 24,000 Palestinians. Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, said he does not expect any country to disagree with calling for a ceasefire and humanitarian assistance for the 2.3 million Palestinians displaced from their homes.
We are not asking for anything other than standing with us against this aggression. We are facing a massive calamity. I don't think that it is exaggeration from us to expect support from our brothers and sisters from the movement.
Uganda recently took over chairmanship of the non-aligned movement from Azerbaijan. Vincent Bajire, the permanent secretary at the Ugandan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says the agenda for the plenary session will be decided by consensus.
We have not subjected the matter of Palestine and Gaza to whether it should be the major topic that we discuss. So Uganda will focus on creating cohesion within the movement to ensure that we can work together as a movement for the good of humanity.
Delegates from Somalia are calling for the 120-state movement to support its territorial integrity and sovereignty. Early this month, Ethiopia signed an agreement with Somaliland, a breakaway region from Somalia, giving Ethiopia access to the sea. In return, Ethiopia would consider recognizing Somaliland as an independent country. Hamza Adan Hado is the permanent secretary in the Somali Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
And that it violates our rights, our integrity, and our unity. So that's why we are pushing, and we believe the peace that we had will contribute if a non-alignment movement members stand with us.
Both Somalia and Palestine have 5 days to convince delegates to prioritize their concerns and come up with resolutions before heads of state fly into Uganda for the summit at the end of this week. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, former U.S. President Donald Trump did well in the Iowa caucus. Find out why after the break.
Hey folks, I'm Luckbill Yabarrow, and I have some electrifying news for you. AFCON 2023 is here, and I'll be at Ivory Coast covering all things AFCON for VOA Africa. We'll have exciting coverage on radio, TV, and all of our digital platforms. Make sure you check out voaafrica.com for AFCON updates. Stay locked right here on VOA Africa.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Former President Donald Trump is the resounding winner of the 2024 Iowa caucus, finishing with more than 50% of the overall vote. As VOA's Ken Farabois reports from Des Moines, dangerously cold weather that descended on Iowa ahead of the caucus impacted turnout, with overall participation down this year after reaching record highs in 2016.
Extreme freezing temperatures didn't deter Sarka Moore from attending one of former President Donald Trump's final 2024 Iowa caucus campaign events. It also didn't dampen her plans to show up in person to support him on caucus night.
I'm excited, very excited. This is my first time.
Moore, an immigrant from the Czech Republic, spent time researching the caucus process as a first-time participant, motivated to support Trump.
I love his policy. Everything was great under Trump's administration. No wars. Economy was great. And there was a open border.
Trump's campaign resonated with Iowans, who braved the cold and ice across the state to deliver him a win with one of the largest margins of any Republican candidate in the contest's history.
You know, I would say this is a pretty good turnout.
Jan Good cast her vote at a caucus site inside a high school gymnasium in the Des Moines suburb of Ankeny.
And I think the people that were absolutely determined were going to be here. I do know of some folks that were older and they chose not to get out. It was slippery coming in.
Good's vote went for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who won the overall count at her specific caucus site.
We're caucusing for what we believe in. And I think that DeSantis is what I would believe in. And I still appreciate Trump. I appreciate what he did. I appreciate how he got it done. I appreciate who he was at the time. Unfortunately, rightly or wrongly, chaos follows him.
DeSantis edged former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley to take second place in Iowa. Businessman Vivek Ramaswamy, who finished fourth, bowed out of the race and endorsed Trump. Among those who finished at the bottom of the results is former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, who didn't hold back his criticism of Trump on the campaign trail.
People don't like hard truth. And if they have an opinion on something and someone speaks against that opinion, they don't think as much of you. And so your negatives go up a little bit. But I also have confidence that I've spoken in the right way. I've spoken as a gentleman. I've spoken what I believe. And that, in the end, is what is important.
Both Democrats and Republicans typically participate in the Iowa caucuses, but this year Democrats turned to mail-in ballots for their presidential preference, with incumbent President Joe Biden expected to win that final tally. Democrats are focusing on the South Carolina primary in February as their first major election event, amid criticism that Iowa and New Hampshire aren't diverse or big enough to play a prominent role early in the nomination process, something Iowa's former Republican Governor Terry Branstad disagrees with.
The system that we have, the Iowa caucuses followed by the New Hampshire primary, means that real people in the caucus state of Iowa, in the primary state of New Hampshire, have an important say in choosing who the leader of this country is going to be.
The campaign for the Republican nomination now shifts to New Hampshire, a state which looks to have better weather and perhaps turnout than Iowa, as it hosts the first in the nation primary election January 23rd. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Des Moines, Iowa.
From Des Moines, we move to western U.S. state of Colorado, where doctors are helping a Ukrainian refugee who was diagnosed with an aggressive form of colon cancer. Svetlana Prieska has our story from the Rocky Mountains town of Estes Park.
Larisa Irklienko and her mother fled the city of Kharkiv on the third day of Russian invasion of Ukraine.
My mom's house was destroyed, part of roof was destroyed. When we moved to the USA with my mom, we understand it is not easy to find second home for us.
They came to the Colorado town of Estes Park to join Irklienko's daughter, Irina, who urged her mother to get a medical checkup following the stresses of fleeing Ukraine. Dr. Jennifer McClellan works at the Estes Park Medical Center.
Larissa was referred for a routine colonoscopy because it's recommended now starting at age 45. She was, I believe, 59 years old at the time, and she had not had a colonoscopy for screening. Actually ended up having a stage 2 cancer.
Dr. McClellan says the cancer was advanced and aggressive, but Irklienko showed no obvious symptoms.
She found out she had this. She sort of realized she had been having some symptoms, but had attributed it to stress and everything that was happening with Ukraine.
Surgery to remove Irklienko's cancer was covered by the U.S. refugee program Uniting for Ukraine. The University of Colorado Health System contributed most of her post-operative care. Irina says those actions saved her mother's life.
Usually it takes time to do the biopsy and to get back the results and all that crazy time of anticipation and waiting for results, but Dr. McClellan saw it right away. She knew what it was. Bless her heart, she jumped on it right away. She connected us with the best specialist, and so I know that she will get the care. It was truly amazing to see the group of professionals to come together and just help.
Irklienko was an engineer in Ukraine. Now she's working in a sandwich shop to improve her English and meet new people in her new community.
In America, all people have the same preventive surgery. In Ukraine, no. So I think if I now was in Ukraine, it can be a very big problem with my illness. In the USA, I saw very modern medicine, so many new technology. It is so important to have preventive medicine and early diagnostic.
While she wants to return to Ukraine when there is peace, Irklienko is grateful for the time here with her granddaughter and daughter.
We're just trying to bring them and make new home for them, and then just pray for the peace back at home and that all this will stop and they'll get to go home healthy and happy.
Nearly 300,000 Ukrainian refugees have been admitted to the United States through the Uniting for Ukraine program since the start of the Russian invasion in February 2022. Svetlana Pristinska, VOA News, Estes Park, Colorado.
In U.S., an automated restaurant is opening this month in Pasadena, California. Cali Express will be serviced by robots that make food in the kitchen and artificial intelligence that takes clients' orders. The only job humans will still need to do is to assemble and pack the food. Angelina Bagdasarian has this story narrated by Anna Rice.
While one robot is making fries, another one is making hamburgers after prepping them.
In the back, there's a refrigerator that has chunks of meat, so it fresh grinds every single patty and forms it to order.
The first fully automated restaurant in the world is opening in Pasadena. Robots that can remember faces will take customer orders and handle payments. The cherry on top, there's no need to leave tips. What's more, owners say it's a revolutionary breakthrough in safety, as slippage and burns can be nearly eliminated, and waste reduced in both food and oil.
We're really focused on the restaurant space. If you think about the restaurant space, it's, you know, they don't have the best technology. It's not really the same as the tech industry. It's the area really that technology left behind.
Restaurant management says the robots are perfect workers. No special requests, no raised demands. And although the amount in maintenance costs is not fully known yet, the owners don't anticipate these to be significant.
We're talking about 5 to 6 people per shift down to 1. So that's, what, an 80% savings?
Saving money is the big driver behind the push to introduce robots to the workforce. In 2023, California Governor Gavin Newsom raised the minimum wage for fast food restaurant workers to $20 an hour, a wage you don't have to pay robots.
One argument on the part of employers who were against the proposition to elevate the minimum wage for fast food workers was that that was going to make it more expensive for them to operate, and they were going to look for ways to cut costs.
Gaspar Rivera Saldago is with the UCLA Institute for Research on Labor and Employment. Rivera Saldago says raising the minimum wage was an attempt to get workers into the fast food business. Lomelino acknowledges that robots are a way to avoid paying that higher wage, but says the robots are doing jobs many people don't want.
But the truth of the matter is, even paying $20 an hour in Pasadena, I will have a hard time hiring enough staff to work here in this restaurant.
While customers might enjoy the novelty of being served by a robot, Saldago says there are tech issues and that, more importantly, people like talking to people.
The employees complain that, you know, they have to monitor these automatic machines because they tend to fail a lot. People end up wanting to talk to a human being because they know that human beings can process more complex requests.
Robots already play huge roles in the manufacturing industry, and inevitably, robotics will infiltrate more and more industries over time. But it remains to be seen if the world is ready for a robot to wait on them and a robotic chef. For Angelina Bogdasaran in Los Angeles, NRI's BOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, January 16, 2024. I'm yet to wait for a robot to serve me in a restaurant, but I don't know whether I will enjoy that food. When I leave you with Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. Been listening to Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We sing for the nation, you know, in the Sambala side, you know. I don't want a Sambala movement. Stick to your responsibility.